It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
The beauty of a just past the midway points of autumn morning to you. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Light the Tower on the Horn. 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We are live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. My name is Craig Way. Glad to have you. And glad to be back with you here in the house, in the studio, here on this Tuesday morning. So much to get to. Just to let folks know a little bit about what's to come. Because this is an abbreviated week for us, what with the Thanksgiving holiday. In fact, I think most of the staff, just about all the staff, at least the on-air staff, will be out tomorrow. I will not be. I'll be here, and we'll have our, excuse me, I'll clear my throat a little bit. We'll have our usual Wednesday morning extravaganza. We'll have Todd Dodge, head coach of the Westlake Chaparrals, with us tomorrow morning. But we've got other things as well. Because there are no shows on Thursday and Friday, we have Thursday being Thanksgiving, Friday being a game day, of course, we have no programs. So there's some alterations, if you will, some changes with the schedule. And so that includes, first of all, as usual on Tuesday, my co-host Jeff Howe is working on, and I think they are indeed putting the finishing touches on this week's edition of the Blitz podcast. He and Rod Babers and also Matt Butler are there alongside, and so they're doing that, and they'll be doing that, and then Jeff will join us shortly thereafterwards. But because the next 2 days are holidays, or staff out tomorrow, most of them, like I said, I'll be here tomorrow, but most of the rest of the guys will be out tomorrow, so we've compressed several of our regular weekly features. For example, Drew Sanders, the head coach of the Vandergrift Vipers, normally joins us on Thursday morning. Coach Sanders does. However, since we don't have a show Thursday, Drew will be on with us a little later on this hour to talk about Vandergrift's Sweet 16 game as they get ready to go down to Corpus Christi to play. And against Edinburgh Vela. Then, of course, in between what we're talking right now, when he joins us, Hank Carter, head coach of the Lake Travis Cavaliers, joins us for our regular spot coming up a little bit later this half hour. Jeff Howe will join us. We'll have a Longhorn notebook, and we will have Inconceivable. Then, just past the top of the hour, Wyatt Thompson, the play-by-play voice of the Kansas State Wildcats, will join us as we take a look at this matchup between Texas and K-State. Now, that's all today. Tomorrow on the program, as we mentioned, Todd Dodge will be with us. Also, Vic Schaefer, Texas women's basketball coach, who normally joins us on Thursday, will join us tomorrow since there's no Thursday or Friday program. And Jeff Abels, head coach of the Bowie Bulldogs, who have their own big matchup against Brennan High, the north side of San Antonio. And Coach Abels normally joins us on Friday. Obviously, that won't be happening with it being a game day around here, and a game day for him as well, by the way, on Friday night. So he will join us tomorrow. So we're going to get everybody on. One other person that we're going to get on is our regular Thursday weekly panelist. He's Greg Tepper, the managing editor of Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine, and certainly a co-host of Rick Renner and yours truly on High School Scoreboard Live. We normally have him on Thursday, He's on right now. He's joining us on the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline, and he's ready to proclaim that Thanksgiving is the greatest holiday ever created. Am I correct on that, Ted?
Oh, you're 100% right. It is. It is the best day of the year on our show, Texas Football Today, which you can watch every weekday at noon on TexasFootball.com. Every day we started off by counting down how many days until Thanksgiving. In the middle of July, we're just telling you it's like 100-something days till Thanksgiving because it's always on our mind. So, yeah, it's a high holiday coming up here on Thursday. And, by the way, imagine the fact that it so happens to be that this year, Thursday is not only the birthday of Turkey Jesus, but it is also the birthday of our Matt Stepp.
Oh,
so
wow.
You want to talk about a big day around these parts. It's big doing.
No doubt. Now, you probably do a better job of than anybody else of keeping up with his travel log. Where's he going to be this week?
Oh, he's all over the place. I believe he's going to. So there is a Thursday night game. There's one Thanksgiving Day game. There's two teams that have the courage to play on Thanksgiving. Wes Rusk is playing out west against a danger or out east against Dangerfield in Longview, so he'll be there. And then he's going to go to Abilene for a doubleheader, and then he's going to go to San Antonio for a tripleheader. So the man will be a little busy, but how else would you expect him to spend his birthday weekend than six high school football games?
Absolutely. No other way, and that's why I'm so obviously impressed by him. Okay, now, Tep, since I've got you on board, what we normally do right around this time on Tuesday, we do our Whataburger Top 5. Now, and like on Mondays, it's top five performances of the just completed weekend, which we did yesterday. On Wednesdays, it's the top five players to watch this week. Snoop handles that for us. On Thursdays, it's the top five road trips of the week. And on Fridays, it's the top five matchups. Tuesday is when we have what we call the double meat with cheese edition. And for the Whataburger top five, it becomes the top 10 because we run down your top 10 poll every week during the regular season and the top 25. Of course, the polls are fixed at the end of the year. They're done. And so now it's about playoffs. So what we do is the top 10 playoff matchups to watch this week. So I'm going to indulge you. I'm going to ask you to listen to the top 10 playoff matchups I have listed to watch this week, and then tell me where you agree, disagree, subtract, add, whatever, okay? All right, without further ado, it's time for the Whataburger Top 10.
Now, it's time for the Whataburger Top 5.
Okay, prepare to receive.
Today's Double Meat with Cheese Edition.
Here we go.
Top 10 rankings.
All right, in this case, as we mentioned, it's the top 10 playoff matchups. Now, Tep, you should also know that we almost always have a tie on the top five at number five, because there's really more than that. And so we have a tie. We have a tie at number 10. I give you Coleman and Hawley and Stephenville and Argyle tied at the number 10 spot. Okay? All right. Number nine. And by the way, I want to point out, it just worked out this way when I went over all these. Most, or at least the plurality of these matchups, are 4A matchups, be them be Division I, Division II, for whatever reason. Number 9, Pleasant Grove and Quinlan Ford. Number 8, a 5A matchup, Lubbock Cooper and Grapevine. Number 7, the aforementioned 3A D2 Thanksgiving Night Turkey Showdown in Longview, West Rusk and Dangerfield. Number 6, back to 4A, Belleville, West Orange, Stark. Number 5, I give you the six-man division. I give you 1A, D1, defending state champion Sterling City against Westbrook. Number 4, 5A, D1, Denton Ryan, Longview. Number 3, maybe laying in the weeds only because of the name of one of the teams, Carthage, but could get pushed by China Spring. Number 2, Munster and Albany, 2A, D2. And I know for a lot of folks in these parts, but certainly I will say as well, the computer seems to agree also, the number one matchup this week, 4A D2, Wimberley-Quero. So there's your Whataburger top 10 plus one there. All right, tell me your impressions. Off the tracks, okay, left something out, swapped something out. What's your thought?
I think you've got a really good list here. And the great thing about this week is you can't go wrong. I mean, there's basically only about three games in the state that I'm not particularly interested in.
Yeah.
And largely those are rematches that we've seen before. Like, for example, with all due respect to our friends in Wortham who have put together a great year, they're playing Mart this week, and this is the second time that they will have played in 4 weeks, and the last time they played Mart 149-0.
Yeah.
You know, same thing goes with Timpson. Timpson, I believe it was Timpson. Who was it? No, there was another team. Oh, I'm sorry. It was Franklin. Franklin is playing Riesel.
Yeah.
Second time this season. The first time they played, Franklin won 75-13. So I don't necessarily keep an eye on that one. But to your point, I think your games are really spot on. The Wimberley-Cuero game is particularly interesting. It is a rematch, as you mentioned, back on I guess, week two or something like early in the season.
Yeah.
And Cuero won 21-3. And that was really the time where we kind of all sat up and said, all right, time to start taking Cuero really seriously. And as I said, we should not take Cuero seriously. But one thing to remember is that Catch McCollum, the quarterback for Wimberley, I believe went out in that game, and Cuero was able to kind of load up against the backup quarterback and get there. Furthermore, Wimberley, I think, is a young team that has grown over the course of the season. So I think that is a certified, really good first, third-round matchup there, worthy of being on the top of the list. I will also bounce back up to the very beginning of your list, to a game that got listed as 10A or 10B, depending on how it, and that's Coleman and Hawley.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if people know this, these are actually the two best scoring defenses in 2A Division I going at it. Coleman has the number one scoring defense in 2A D1, and I believe Hawley has the number two. I think they're tied with Shiner for number two. I mean, these defenses are, really, really solid, and they're going to be. I think it's one of those games where 17 points wins the game, and that's not to say that these guys don't have great offenses. They certainly do, but these defenses have been absolutely outstanding. I think it's a really good list. I'm glad you put in Carthage and China Spring. I think that is a really interesting game. I'm going to try to make my way out to that game because I think this is a test for Carthage. One of the biggest tests for Carthage in the playoffs that we've seen, at least in a couple of years. Because last year, you remember, Craig, we were here on your program, and we were kind of talking about Carthage, and it really felt like a fait accompli for Carthage last year.
Mm-hmm.
This is a real challenge for them in China Spring with one of those dynamic running quarterbacks in the state, Major Bowden. But how does he match up against what has been a relentless Carthage defense? I think that's going to be a lot of fun. So, yeah, I think your Whataburger double meat, double cheese top 10 is pretty good.
And who doesn't like double meat with cheese, right? I mean, it's very good. I'm gonna cherry pick a couple of the matchups off this list. Get your thoughts on them, and then a couple of folks have asked for your thoughts on a couple of other matchups. Denton Ryan and Longview, two heavyweights slugging it out. How about your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and it's important to remember that this is another rematch. This is a week one affair between Ryan and Longview that Ryan kind of ran away from him 40-7. Now, I think Longview is better than they were in week one. I think that they have improved. I think they've cleaned a lot of things up. They did not shoot themselves in the foot. I mean, they took an Uzi to their foot in that game. I mean, it was just over and over and over. They have cleaned things up a little bit, and they can challenge Ryan, who, again, I just keep saying this, their defense is unbelievable. I just have big questions about their offense. Their offense has been kind of fits and spurts, and especially the way that College Station is playing right now. I mean, you got to think that, you got to think that Ryan may be in danger. Now, I like Ryan in this game. I think that while this game will be closer than the first one, I do think Ryan's the favorite. But Longview has sternly improved, and you doubt John King at your peril.
Yeah. And which brings me to when you mentioned about doubting teams at their peril. Cedar Park fit in that category? Now, you talk about biting off more than perhaps you could chew. They get Pato this week, but this was a team that was struggling and right around the 500 mark, and folks are like, well, maybe this is the year they go quickly if they even get it, because they went into the last week of the season mathematically on the bubble a little bit for even getting in, but they got in, and now they've won back-to-back games impressively.
Yeah, and they're rolling right now. I mean, the worst thing you can do with a program like Cedar Park is give them any sort of confidence because they're going to make you pay for it. But last week, I think, week one, obviously, they beat Buda Johnson in double overtime. That was impressive. I thought what they did last week to Angleton was very impressive. That's a good Angleton team. And maybe they were, out of the coin flip type game, but to go and really take it to them, I thought was impressive. I think that offense has really started to round into form, which I think is impressive, because that was kind of a bugaboo, especially down the stretch against them. You know, defense, I think, is playing pretty well as well. Now, Pato's a different animal. Pato's going to be the best team they've played.
Since Vandegrift?
maybe aside from Vandegrift, yeah, exactly. Since week one. So that's going to be a tough test for them. But that said, you know, they're playing with a lot of confidence. And when you have that kind of pedigree, that's going to travel as well. And so, yeah, I think Cedar Park is one of those teams that, you know, sometimes a hot team is tougher to play than a great team. And Cedar Park's certainly a hot team.
Okay, here's one that's a little bit fascinating. I had a couple of people weigh in on the Specs text line with this. Wanting your take on another rematch. You have an undefeated Granger team against Burton, who technically, according to the standings, finished 2-8 because of forfeits on that, and yet they've, you know, rolled through their first two, and the computer even likes Burton by 10 points in this against an unbeaten Granger team in this rematch, a rematch of a game that Granger won earlier.
Yeah. Okay.
Because of the forfeit.
First of all, this is a fascinating game. Okay, it's a fascinating game because it was a great game on the field when they played. Burton won 28-22. I want to say this game was really tight into the final minutes, and Burton came away with a win.
Yep.
So obviously these are two teams that are going to meet once again, and anytime you have a close first matchup, you're anxious to see a rematch. Let me sprinkle in a little extra seasoning on this turkey here, so to speak. And that is, there are rumors and reports out there that Granger was the one who blew the whistle on Burton. That Granger was the one who went out there and said, hey, by the way, you need to check into the eligibility of that player they've got. And which ended up costing them the 7 forfeit wins and dropped them all the way to, they finished, 2-8 on the year, but they were actually 9-1 on the field. So there is bad blood between these two teams. There's going to be chirping. This is going to be physical. This is going to be nasty. Like, these are two teams that do not like each other, both in a larger rivalry sense and also in a micro what happened this year sense. I think this game is going to be real chippy, and it's going to be really fun to watch. If you like emotional football, Granger and Burton is going to be a lot of fun because they're just those little extra, that little extra context that is put around them that suddenly, makes what was already an interesting game, devoid of context, even more tantalizing.
Yeah, by the way, for folks in these parts, you want a game to see on Friday night? It's in Elgin. Those two getting together in Elgin, so that'll be fun. Visiting Greg Tepper, managing editor of Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine. Okay, I think I've saved the best for last, Tep. And sure enough, other people have caught on to it. They're already wanting your take on this. But I was holding this one out to the end because we do have what I think is a first. You may have the empirical evidence to refute this. But I believe we're going to have at least a third round anyway, for the first time, a third round Texas high school football playoff matchup played in the state of Louisiana. Texas High of Texarkana against Port Neches Groves. Now, I remember high school playoff games between teams on opposite sides of the panhandle meeting in Altus, Oklahoma. That made geographical sense. Altus is a big stadium. Childress was involved in one of those a few years ago, and it worked out, and they kind of cut off the angle where the state of Texas cuts north. But I can honestly tell you, I can't ever remember a Texas high school football playoff game being played in Louisiana, and I certainly can't remember one being played this late in the day as they play at Rags Turpin Stadium there in Natchitoches, Louisiana, on the campus of Northwestern State. Do you?
Boy, this is going to sound strange. I seem to remember there being a game involving Highland Park in Louisiana.
Maybe in Shreveport? In the Independence Bowl, maybe?
Yeah, maybe there. That springs to mind. I can't confirm that, so nobody listen to me. Turn off your radio. Don't turn off your radio. Listen to the show. But what I'm saying is, this is certainly rare. Especially you said the important term, which is in the third round. You'll have these things in bye districts. You remember a few years ago, we would have playoff games in New Mexico. because you would have teams from the Panhandle playing teams from El Paso, and they say, well, why don't we just cut the corner there and go play in New Mexico? We've had games in New Mexico. We've had games in Oklahoma, things like that. Louisiana, though, this one's new. This feels new. But you put it out there on social media, you go, hey, how remarkable is this? And then people say, why in the world are we going to do that? Well, guys, go pull out a map. And I want you to put a pin in Texas, Texarkana, and I want you to put a pin in Port Neches. And I want you to tell me where the big stadiums are between them. And so probably what happened, I don't know who's playing in Nacogdoches. Actually, I do know who's playing in Nacogdoches. It might be Stephen F. Austin.
It's you know who it is? It's Beckville-Timpson.
Beckville-Timpson. So they beat them to it.
Yep.
And so then they're looking for – they need a big stadium because they're 2-5-A teams with good fan bases that are going to travel. They need somewhere to go. And they go, well – what about Natchitoches? Why don't we go over there? And so, sure enough, we're getting a game out there in Louisiana, and it should be a fun matchup. I'll tell you that, you know, Port Neches Groves, I thought what they did last week was really impressive, beating previously unbeaten Montgomery. They are taking on a new, different kind of team in Texas High, who is old-school physical defense. I mean, for them to shut out Texas City last week was incredibly impressive. And I love their running back, Braylon Stewart. I think that guy's a star. He reminds me to remind you of another big game this week. Jeanette and Brock is a huge matchup this week. But he reminds me a lot of Xavier Wishart, the running back there at Jeanette. He's just a closer. He's the guy who gets stronger as the game goes on. So that's a game I'm really excited about, and see how this Port Neches Groves offense, which has been really explosive, matches up against one of the hottest defenses in the state.
By the way, we do have the answer, and I thought I vaguely remembered it. I'm glad you jogged my memory and somebody else did. Texas High beat Highland Park in November of 06 at Independence Stadium, Shreveport. Ryan Mallett was the quarterback for Texas High in that one.
Uh-huh.
Second round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
That's the last time
it
happened.
That was the only reason it jogged me, because, you know, and you'll see, by the way, you know, in non-district and stuff like that, it's not rare for Longview to play a team from you know, Shreveport or
right.
that, or, you know, play a team from, you know, they'll play a team from New Orleans and they'll meet in Shreveport or something like that. But for a playoff, two Texas teams to play a third round matchup in Louisiana, it is certainly rare. I'll say that.
No doubt about it. He's Greg Tepper. You can follow his outstanding work at Tepper. And, of course, he's the managing editor of Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine. Hey, Tep, we shift to Saturday this week, so look forward to being back with you and Rico in the studio.
We missed you desperately last week, but I know you were busy with Longhorns duty. We are excited to have you back in studio, partner.
We'll look forward to it. Thanks, Tep. All right. That's Greg Tepper. And, yes, there's been somebody else said, hey, maybe Longview Marshall played a first-round game there several years ago. It's the rarity is that you're getting to the Sweet 16 and you're playing a playoff game in Louisiana. That's the rarity of the whole deal. But such is the unique state of affairs in Texas high school football. All right, coming up, Hank Carter, head coach of the Lake Travis Cavaliers, when we continue with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and hornfm.com. Our thanks to Greg Tepper, managing editor of Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine, joining us here. And, it was good to get his take on a lot of things. Somebody else had mentioned here. Oh, old Daryl, by the way, says, hey, how about giving a little shout-out to those Battling Billies of Fredericksburg? You know, that was the take it out Cal Allen last week?
Yes, sir.
Very impressive,
yes,
for
sir.
Fredericksburg to take out Cal Allen. Now they play Pleasanton. Maybe a rematch with LBJ in the quarterfinals.
It's going to happen. Pleasanton, they squeaked by whoever they played by a point at home last week.
Yep.
The Billies are good.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see if that happens. You know, there is the very real possibility of a couple of area team rematches in the quarterfinals. You could have that. You could conceivably have that as a matchup there. So, well, anyway, we'll talk more about that. But coming up, we'll visit with Drew Sanders, head coach of the Vandegrift Vipers, coming up in about 10 minutes. But fresh from a brand new edition of the Blitz podcast and ready to take his spot.
And Blitz wrapped up a little bit ago, actually.
Yeah, you guys, as promised, ahead of the game. You guys were...
We're all drinking out of a fire hose this week. So.
Yeah, it's all that. He, of course, is my co-host, the pride of Northwest Williamson County, a proud graduate of Florence High School.
Damn right.
Where they knew him as Highway 79 there. Formal, honorable mention, all-district offensive lineman for the Florence Buffaloes, but you know him best for his outstanding work at Horns 24/7. That, of course, is Jeff Howe.
What's up, Craig?
How was that blitz?
Blitz was good. Got my column posted on something I'll probably talk about before the end of the show, that Texas quarterback situation,
yep,
which never ends around here. Quarterback issues.
Never does it? No, it's always a topic of conversation, which, of course, now folds us right into the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook.
Is it on cue?
But I don't want to talk about quarterbacks right now. We'll save that for hour number two.
Okay.
What I want to talk about right now is the Texas defense.
Sure.
And Sark mentioned yesterday, there's been a couple things with this defense. Sark mentioned yesterday that one of his main priorities this offseason being through scheme or personnel, you got to get a better pass rush. And one of the metrics, Craig, I love looking at, one of the analytics sites I love looking at is Football Outsiders, because they actually track line statistics. And the line statistics for this Texas defensive line are not good.
Talk about a deep dive there, line statistics.
So you can look at the raw sack numbers. And by I didn't believe this until I looked at the numbers this morning. Do you want to take a wild guess who the leader in sacks is on this Texas team right now?
Ovie Ogbu?
Good guess, but no.
Did somebody get two sacks last weekend that put him over the top?
How about Ben Davis at 2.5?
Yeah.
Look at Snoop right there. You didn't get your number 6 jersey this year, did you?
No. Well, I might now.
Wear it in perpetuity.
Yeah.
Ben Davis with 2.5. Now, obviously, there's one more game left to play. We'll see if there are guys that can get to that point. But that would be, I believe, the lowest total for a Texas sack leader on a defense. I believe Malik Jefferson had 4 back in 2016.
Okay.
I think that was the last lowest total. And I'll have a better idea once I get looking at the records on, you know, what was the last time basically the sack leader was that low. But you start looking at the sack numbers, correct, for this defense, and Ben Davis doesn't even figure this because this is defensive line numbers.
Right.
Texas right now, 115th in the country, according to Football Outsiders, in sack rate. 112th right now in standard down sack rate, and 73rd in the country in passing down sack rate. So when you know the opponent is going to throw the football, your sack rate is only 7.4%.
The
percentage puts you in the bottom half of the country. You rank 73rd, but yeah, it's an outside of the random year where Texas has had a Joseph Osai,
mm-hmm,
or a Charles Omenihu.
Mm-hmm.
This program, it's been a while now for this Texas program, a problem just having an organic pass rush.
The three painful words that unfortunately I've had to utter all too often this season are the three words, can't get home.
Oh, yeah.
When they've had the rush, blah, 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 and got right there, but can't get home, or couldn't get home, and boom, complete. On the 3rd and 19, the 3rd and 18 that went for 19.
Yeah.
That was a can't get home. They were close.
Yeah.
And CGH, couldn't get home.
Couldn't get home. And, you know, we just went over some numbers. Rod broke it down on the blitz. And do you remember, Craig, when this is just kind of encompassing how bad the defense has been. You remember... And I think this goes into the pass rush problems. RG3's Heisman year at Baylor, when they were completing, I want to say it was like 35-40% of their passes 20 yards or more down the field.
Right.
And we were all astonished that, like, good Lord, that is an insanely high number, because those are low percentage passes.
Sure.
Do you realize, like, Rod broke it down on the blitz just now, the completion percentage allowed for the Texas secondary on passes of 20 yards or more down the field right now is 62%. That's hard to do in a video game, folks. Converting almost 2/3 of the opponent's passes 20 yards or more down the field are getting completed. So that's where Pete Kwiatkowski feels the need to drop and play coverage on those 3rd and long situations. But the problem is you don't have an organic pass rush, and you're having coverage issues. I asked Sark after the game, remember, about the 3rd and 18 and the 3rd and long, it's West Virginia 5-for-7 on 3rd and 9+. And Sark got asked about that, but I asked him, I said, does that encompass kind of the entire day for the defense? Because whether it was shallow crossers, deep crossers, in-breaking routes, everything Jarrett Dagey got, I keep calling him his brother, I keep calling him Seth, keep referring back to his brother, everything Jarrett Dagey got was pretty much, felt like it was between the hashes.
Right.
Not even between the numbers, between the hashes. And Sark said, after time in postgame, he said, our down and distance recognition has to be better, and our situational awareness isn't very good. Because you've got to realize, based on looking at the formation, and he elaborated on this yesterday, based on looking at the formation, knowing what kind of routes they're going to run if you've studied film, there's only a certain number of things they can do if it's third and six, or if it's third and eight, or if it's third and 13, or whatever the down and distance is. And you basically got to play the sticks and put yourself, regardless of what the call is, put yourself in a position to make a play on the ball. And he, the two words he mentioned yesterday, football IQ, he talked about that needing to get better. That tells you either it's not being taught the right way, or guys can't understand it, or the guys just aren't putting in the work themselves,
right,
to be more situationally aware on the field. But nothing has fit with this defense, Craig. They can't cover. They can't rush the passer. They lead the Big 12 in missed tackles. Everything has gone wrong. And I'm not in favor of firing Pete Kwiatkowski. I don't think four defensive coordinators
despite
in 4 years.
Despite what you tweeted yesterday.
Oh no!
Tell people about that.
Yeah, Craig. So in a rush at the St. Louis airport to change planes, I was answering some questions on the flagship message board at Hornets 24/7, and I'm going through, like, yeah, the defense hasn't got better. Like, even things this defense has been reasonably good at, right? Like, okay, they can turn you over. They didn't have a force of turnover in a West Virginia game. Well, they've actually been one of the better red zone defenses in the Big 12 in terms of touchdown percentage. Going into the West Virginia game, they had the third best touchdown percentage allowed in the Big 12. They were only allowing touchdowns on 53% of their red zone possessions. West Virginia got in the red zone 4 times, scored 4 touchdowns.
Yep.
So this defense is regressing. It's going downhill really fast. And I said, look, even all that said, what I meant to say was, I don't think firing PK is the answer. But in my message board post, I left out the most important word in that sentence.
Don't!
Which was don't.
I think firing PK is the
So, no. I don't think firing Pete Kwiatkowski is the answer. But Sark needs to have suggestions, if not just demands, on how to fix this defense. And Pete Kwiatkowski's got to take a real honest look at himself and say, what do you need to change to make this defense better? Because you can improve personnel. You can improve personnel to take you from being an absolutely terrible defense to an elite defense in 1 year. It's just not going to happen. That's going to lead me to the quarterback conversation next hour. But,
okay,
boy, this defense, Craig, it is going to go down as one of the worst in school history. And it's the eye test, the numbers, it's all bad.
You talk about Pro Football Focus, how they do that, you know, that real deep dive breakdown stuff.
By the way, according to Pro Football Focus, Texas is 115th in the country in pass rush.
Okay. In that, I'm sure they don't have this stat. The stat doesn't even exist, at least in terms of being an officially categorized number. But they're really good at coming up with certain. I would love to see them do a CGH stat, a couldn't get home stat, when they have, say, either a linebacker or a defensive lineman within, say, arm's length or 2 feet,
yeah,
or whatever, 2 yards or a yard of the quarterback and couldn't finish the play, and it results in a downfield pass, a CGH stat.
You can kind of, to an extent, figure that out on your own. In other words, if you're looking at, you know, pressure rate,
yeah,
pressures,
yeah,
and then actually sacks, and if there's a really big discrepancy there,
yeah.
Well, two things. If there's a really big discrepancy there and your sack numbers are really high,
yeah,
then you're just really good at generating a pass rush, either,
sure,
organically or manufacturing it. But if there's a big discrepancy and your sack numbers are really low,
yeah,
then that means you're not very good at getting home and getting to the quarterback.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see if they did it. The pressure and sack numbers versus offset by the number of deep balls completed down those 20-yard passes you're talking about downfield, or even just third downs, when that happens on third down, because we,
yeah,
know what happened on third down last week with 12 out of 20. So
real quick on the Specs text line, I am in agreement with some of the texters. I do think one thing Sark needs to look at, he hired 3 defensive assistant coaches before he hired his coordinator. And it's not to say that, you know, Terry Joseph or Blake Gideon or Bo Davis are solely responsible and then the staff chemistry is bad or anything like that, but if PK does decide, look, you've invested a lot of money in this defensive coordinator, Craig. So I think you need to give him the tools. If he has an honest assessment of himself, give him the tools he needs to fix it. If it is switching out an assistant coach or two, fine. Also, one question real quick, gambling fanatic, would care to comment on Brian Jones' comments made in the Austin American Statesman? First off, he didn't make those in the Austin American Statesman. He made those on the station,
on
Shirts and Skins last Friday. And Sark said yesterday, point blank, he has never had a donor suggest to him what he should do or make basically demands on what should happen in terms of playing personnel.
I think Chris Toconte called the comments, what was it, utterly ridiculous, I think is what he said, something like that. I think his response was...
Look, as far as the comments themselves, I'm not in a position to, you know, to say what Brian Jones did or didn't hear or didn't know or whatever. I just know if you have, like, donor interference on your Texas football bingo card, you can go ahead and fill that space, or alleged donor interference, go ahead and fill that space. And there's not a lot of blank spaces on that card this year, Craig.
Ah, all right. It's time to go back to another coach conversation, and this one, of course, brought to you by our friends at Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Check them out online at cpdoors.com. Joining us on the Vaqueros Cafe hotline, and we're very grateful he was able to move his schedule up 2 days from Thursday to Tuesday, because we all know we're out on Thanksgiving. Drew Sanders, head coach of the Vandegrift Vipers, who, by the way, speaking of defense, how about a 38-0 shutout of Cibolo Steel? Drew, you've had some good performances by your defense this season. That's got to rank up there with the best you've had this season, doesn't it?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. You know, Steel is a – first of all, good morning. Can you say good morning?
Morning
to you guys.
To you.
Y'all doing okay? Yeah, I mean, we were swarming. We ran our calls and our you know, tendencies, you know, all that stuff that we thought would happen happened, and our guys tackled well, and the energy level of our team was through the roof. And so that was just, we went into hostile territory, and instead of, you know, worrying about that, we just said, hey, we're going to take this place over and play really well. And they did that. I was impressed with really all phases.
Well, and then obviously getting your offense in gear, you mentioned last week getting out to a quick start would make a big difference, mm-hmm. and clearly it did in this one.
Yeah. You know, my offense scored on its first four possessions, touchdowns on its first four possessions, and they had the drives. You know, we didn't really get any takeaways. It was just them. I think every drive was over 75 yards, and so they had to execute. They had to complete, you know, convert third downs. And you know, it was an impressive performance all around. Braden was accurate. My receivers caught the football when it was thrown to him. O-line block. We were able to get, some nice run yardage too. My running back went over 100 yards. So it's always a good recipe for success. We know that.
Drew, I know in games, we always talk about the opening script for an offense, and you know, that'll usually last some coaches like doing 12, 15, whatever. But you know, when you get into the playoffs, you get into these high leverage games. For your offensive staff, how important are your drive starters, you know, your first down package, because you don't want to be behind the chains in these games and put yourself behind the eight ball. How important are those drive starters for you?
You know, they are, and we've actually been pretty good. This week, our first down play went for zero, and so, you know, you never want to see that. But on second and 10, Reese Beecham, you know, we've mentioned him several times, catches one right over the middle. It's just a throw where you've got to have guts to go catch it. It was high, right over the middle, and Reese just snags it out of the air and converts. And then after that, it was kind of on. I mean, that was the beginning play of a wonderful first drive. And so, you know, just as impressed as I can get with my offensive staff. You know, they're finding the things that they need to find on tendencies and trying to take advantage of. And this is the time of year where you as an offense, you set up all these kinds of tendencies, you have all this stuff, and then you break your tendencies at key points during the year. And so, you know, it's fun to see our offensive guys do that. And we had a couple of trick plays too that hit home. So that's always fun.
Visiting with Drew Sanders, head coach of the Vandegrift Vipers, here on Light the Tower. Craig Way, Jeff Allen, Snoop Daniel.
Coach, I wanted to ask about two more of your receivers, and I'm calling Graylin a playoff spring because it seems like he just really shows up in the postseason. But also, he didn't have a touchdown last week, but Jack Nelson is playing real big for you too. Can you talk about them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, both those guys, seniors, first of all. So you're talking about two seniors, and we all know in high school football how important it is that your seniors are leaders, they're hard workers, and obviously you need talent too. But both of those guys you described are leaders. They are hard workers and do what we ask and making plays. You know, Jack had a really nice catch, a long catch, and then Graylin, I think he had two touchdowns. I'm not sure, but
he did.
He caught the ball when he needed to, and he also is a really good edge blocker. He's so big. I'm so proud of both of those young men.
Drew, you brought up trick plays as well, and I'm always interested in the philosophy of coaches on how long you hold on to them, and when you get in the playoffs where it's win or go home, when the right moment against particular look you're getting, when you spin the play, and other coaches say, yeah, but it also makes the next opponent have to plan for something like that. What's your thought and philosophy on trick plays, when you decide to use them, and that sort of thing, especially once you get into the postseason?
Well, I mean, first of all, trick plays to the offense are like a shot in the arm as far as like in practice. You know, kids love to practice them. And so you've got to, we practice them every day because kids are like, all right, here we go. We're going to work on, like last week, Reese threw a throwback to Braden, and Braden Buchanan made this unbelievable catch. I'll try to send you film of it, but he basically mossed this DB and caught it over him, and he's our quarterback. But we call that El Diablo. you name your trick plays, kind of fun names, and you rotate. You know, Coach Mauser does such a great job. He has three or four he rotates, and he keeps rotating and working them until he uses them, and then he installs a new one, each week. And so we carry those into the game, and we're ready. And you go off a feel to answer the question. You go off a feel and what happened, and did I run this play to set it up, or did it run this formation to kind of set it up? Because he'll literally run kind of throwaway plays at times to, set other things up later in the game.
Drew, when you look at the program you've built there and the success you've had, one of the goals for everybody in this state when you get to this time of year is to practice during Thanksgiving. As the head coach, kind of responsible for the overall culture of this thing, how do you make sure, especially the younger kids in your program, understand the work that goes into this to make sure they're not taking it for granted, thinking, hey, this is something that just should happen every year? There's a lot of work that went in to get to this point.
Yeah, every day it's a daily fistfight for your culture. And so every single day I hear one conversation, I can go and my coaches can go from being super happy talking to a kid, they'll say something negative, and then we go, no, that's not how we are here. That's not, it's just every day we are ready to correct and make sure that they know what our culture is here at Vandegrift. Then a couple of simple ways we do it. We have a very large playoff team we take along with us, and they get to watch all these older guys. So they see what it's like, and they see how intense varsity football is. And they come and practice with us. And then, probably the biggest thing overall is just our off season. Of course, it's just a 10-minute interview, so we don't have time to talk about it, but we do so many things in off season that challenge the kids. We kind of, boot camp is probably one of the biggest things we do. And it basically makes to see if they're going to rise to the challenge or not. And then everybody just kind of knows that that's, how we step forward is that kind of stuff in off season. So, yeah, it's a big, huge question that I could talk for like hours on.
I bet you could probably talk for hours on the machinations that go into deciding a site and a time and a playoff thing for an opponent. I know that's always pretty interesting. But as you get ready for this Edinburgh Vela team, it's a road trip down to Corpus Christi this week. And I know we've talked about road trips before, but it's a unique situation and a unique matchup on what is commonly referred to around here as Valley Week.
Mm-hmm. Edinburgh's a long way away. Somebody asked me the other day, like, hey, why aren't we playing Corpus? I'm like, have you looked? Check this thing out. Like, they're really, really far away from us. So, it's either Corpus or San Antonio, right? And so we got the flip on the day because he had played Saturday, so we got to play Friday, but he got a little closer to him. He's still got to drive 2.5 hours to get to Corpus. I'm driving a little over three to get there, 3:20. So, it's just, it is what it is, right? So get on the bus. Let's have a good attitude about it and hopefully get out with some energy and some excitement and understanding what's at stake.
What when you look at and they have one of the more unusual mascot names, the Sabercats, when you take a look at them, what really stands out to you about them?
Well, the first thing is they're 12-0. They have dominated the Valley. They're obviously 6A school that has just had tons of success. I'm not sure. I need to go back and check, but I think they've been undefeated in regular season, like, four out of the last 5 years or something crazy like that. But they're 12-0 this year. They have athletes. They have tremendous players. And you know what they have is a culture of playing really hard. I will never forget how I felt like I kind of underestimated them in 2015, and they almost beat us. We were lucky to get out there with a win, won 49-39 in 2015. These guys play hard. They're stronger than you realize, and they have an amazing culture. So they're going to be everything we want for a third-round opponent.
All right. Hey, Drew, we appreciate you accelerating your timetable to join us, and wish you a happy Thanksgiving, and look forward to a big game for you on Friday afternoon, and wish you all the best this week.
Thanks, guys.
All right. That's Drew Sanders, head coach of the Vandegrift Vipers, and the Vipers play Edinburgh Vela, the Sabercats. They play them at Cabinet Stadium there in Corpus Christi. 4 o'clock Friday afternoon, you'll hear it on 101.9 and AM 1260. Snoop will have a little Flex ATX pregame there for you at the bottom of the hour, so we'll have that. All right, up next, we'll have Inconceivable as we continue to light the tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Before you head to your game on Friday night, Greg Way, Jeff Howe, and Snoop Daniel, light the tower.
Inconceivable. 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 Inconceivable!
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Got a couple of quick things here. And then, of course, Wyatt Thompson, play-by-play voice of the Kansas State Wildcats, will join us next hour. Also, in case you're wondering what happened to Hank Carter, Lake Travis was still on the practice field, but Coach Carter is going to join us coming up next hour, right around the bottom of the hour, right after the Longhorn Notebook. So we will have our weekly conversation with the head coach of the Lake Travis Cavaliers. First of all, here's a quick question for you, Jeff. I know we have lots of strange laws in our country. Do you know that it's illegal to have a metal detector around a National Historic Site?
No, did not know that.
I take you to Charleston, South Carolina, where federal agents are looking for
Federales,
Yeah, they are looking for someone who used a metal detector and dug 19 holes earlier this month looking for artifacts at a historic site which was once the Charleston area plantation of a signer of the United States Constitution. The Charles Pinckney National Historic Site rangers there found the holes all over the park last week. Some of them had discarded metal artifacts nearby. Some did not, leading rangers to think a thief was using a metal detector to steal artifacts they wanted. And the digging also caused damage to resources at the park. It is both illegal to dig without permission, of course, and to have a working metal detector at a national park site. So I just want to let you know that the next time you haul out your metal detector, Jeff, you know, you can't.
I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, you just can't.
Because I'm doing so many expeditions where I have a metal detector handy.
We've discussed about international travel destinations. You have very